Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. Thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me this morning. Hope you're well, too.
Thank you. I have a couple of things I wanted to talk about. First, I'm going to talk about Ukraine. And then second, I want to talk about something very local and near and dear to a lot of people's hearts here in Connecticut. Yesterday, this is obviously major news this morning, the latest out of Russia and Ukraine. There was a Russian bombing of a maternity hospital, and U.S. and NATO officials are now being called out because of the not imposing of a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Ukrainian President Zelensky is accusing the West of being an accomplice, ignoring terror. And in an interview, he said that yesterday the world did nothing and said, quote, "I'm sorry, but it's true." What is your response to that?
Let's be clear about what a no-fly zone means. And in fact, I discussed it just last night at a meeting of senators with the president. It means that we would destroy Russian anti-aircraft facilities, some of them probably based in Russia, because that kind of step is necessary to disarm the potential threat to our aircraft, which would enforce a no-fly zone. In other words, the Russians have anti-aircraft facilities that they could use to take out our aircraft that would be flying over Ukrainian space in potential combat with Russian fighters, but also destroying military facilities of the Russians. Inevitably, that kind of confrontation could escalate and become literally and the next world war, and possibly even a nuclear confrontation or conflict. So a no-fly zone has very, very dangerous implications. Now, so far as I'm concerned, it might well still be on the table as a potential use of American military force. What was done at that maternity hospital is just so atrocious, so abhorrent. It's obviously a war crime to bomb a hospital, not to mention maternity hospital. And Vladimir Putin clearly has blood on his hands. He should be deemed a war criminal. He is responsible for this brutal, craven, cruel assault on innocent civilians there and all around Ukraine. And we need to provide more arms. I've advocated, for example, that MiG-29s now in the Polish armed forces be provided, more Stinger missiles, more Javelin missiles, more small arms to its people, but also even stronger sanctions on Russia, including on all the banks in Russia and all the oligarchs and cronies of Putin, as well as Putin himself, because he has wealth hidden all around the world. And we can track it down and crack down on it. So there are still other available means of tightening the vice on Vladimir Putin.
It looks like, though, we also have new nuclear concerns this morning, Senator Blumenthal. Russia now controlling at least two of Ukraine's power plants. So even calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal, I mean, what ultimately can be done at this point to stop this? I mean, that might sound like a very ridiculous question, but it just seems like they are just overtaking more and more and doing more and more atrocities, and it doesn't seem to be slowing up.
The question will be what the risks are and dangers to our own national security and our own defense interests if we are involved more deeply. The president has ruled out combat troops from the United States on the ground. I agree with him. I think that we should aid the Ukrainians in defending themselves, but not involve American combat forces directly. And that's, again, a limitation that we may regret emotionally. And I've met with courageous and dedicated Ukrainian-Americans throughout Connecticut who feel deeply, as I do, that the United States can and should do more. But direct military confrontation with Russia at this point raises dangers, and I know that people want the United States to do more. I think we can do more on the economic and the military front by providing more aid to Ukraine, particularly humanitarian assistance. It's included in the omnibus budget that we will vote on today in the United States Senate, billions of dollars for humanitarian assistance going to Ukraine. Ukraine is not a NATO ally, therefore we have no obligation in terms of a treaty to come to its aid, as we do, for example, Poland, the Baltic states, and others that are members of NATO. And NATO has been very unified in saying no combat troops, no combat direct involvement by NATO on the ground or in the air.
We're talking to Senator Blumenthal this morning, the latest in the fallout of the Russia-Ukraine attack. At least 38 states, including Connecticut here, we have averages of more than $4 a gallon for our gas. And I know, Senator Blumenthal, that you have proposed getting rid of the gas tax. I know that's something that you've been working on. I have to be honest, it's really bothersome. That even though we're not going to be using Russia, which is very little, honestly, that Connecticut, or I should say that the United States uses, when the president says, you know, I'm releasing 60 million barrels, that's really not a lot. That's about 3 days worth. I really wish we'd stop saying it, only because it gives people very false hope that we're going to be doing something. And I understand the environmental implications of drilling here and using our oil here in the U.S., but we have the resources in different states that were up and running at one point, and I'm just not sure why we're allowing states like even California to go over $5 a gallon to the point that they may get to $7 a gallon in a matter of weeks. Why we wouldn't use our own resources at this point?
Well, that's really an excellent question, Melissa. And you know who you should ask it of? The oil company. They have something like 9,000 licenses. They could begin using them right away all around the United States. The fact of the matter is the oil companies are making windfall profits, huge profits, record profits, the highest increases in profits in 7 years. They're profiting and profiteering as a result of these heightening prices. That's why I've proposed a windfall profits tax applied to them. It could be used potentially to help lower prices. You're right. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve is providing a bit of aid, but nowhere near enough. Suspending the gas tax, 18.4 cents a gallon, as I've proposed, I'm still urging it in legislation, would help. But we need various measures. There's no single panacea. But let's look to the oil companies that are benefiting from the lack of supply because they can charge more. And also the OPEC nations. Those nations in the Middle East depend, in effect, on our military to keep their supply lanes open for their oil. And yet they are continuing to maintain levels of production lower than pre-COVID. There's no reason they can't produce more. In the long run, we need to have and invest in renewable energy, clean energy, solar and wind, which we are very well positioned to do in Connecticut, and in effect, break free of the dictators and autocrats around the world that have us dependent on them. We are not dependent on Russia. Only a minute amount of our oil comes from Russia. But we need to break free of any outside dictators and autocrats and become energy independent.
And I think that's a long-term goal. I think it's something that we want to work on. But while we're in the here and now, and gas prices are horrible, heating oil prices are insane, you're saying this is not something coming from a political head. This comes down to the oil companies, essentially. And if that's the case, is our president or our lawmakers, are they pushing for them to use our resources we have or even threaten, like you said, OPEC? I mean, if they're relying on our military, why not threaten them back? Why not, you know, take our resources away? I don't know if that's you know, obviously it's going to cause controversy, but I just think we're just sort of sitting ducks saying, well, we just got to deal with, you know, the high prices. Like, I know you proposed getting rid of the gas tax, I feel like over a month ago, and there's still been no movement. I'm just thinking, like, at what point do we see any kind of movement? Because this is crazy. I mean, Connecticut, I think, will get over $5 in a matter of a week. I feel pretty confident about that at this point.
Part of it is the disruption of the world markets. We can't control them. Vladimir Putin has degraded the world supply, in effect, by disrupting the Russian sources of supply, which Europe depends on much more than we do. So Vladimir Putin's war, his war of choice, unprovoked and unnecessary, is having economic impacts all around the world, not only in oil, but, as you know, going to the grocery store, the prices of a lot of other goods are going up, too. So it's corn and wheat, and his war has disrupted the world market. And hopefully that war will end and we can return to something like normal. And other steps are necessary to combat inflation as well, more broadly. But on the oil prices, look to the oil companies. Follow the money. I've introduced legislation, literally, we're introducing it today or tomorrow, that would impose a windfall profits tax, which would be an incentive for them to produce more. And I've spoken to administration officials about it. I'm hoping for their support.
Senator Blumenthal, I wish we didn't run out of time because I did want to talk about the restaurant revitalization program. It sounds like that money is not coming through, and now it's leading dozens, if not hundreds, of Connecticut and I'm sure nationwide restaurants to close. I think that's also going to happen in the next month or two, it sounds like. So I don't know. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I did want to talk about that at some point as well, because I think a lot of restaurants are in incredible jeopardy this morning because we're not going to put money in that revitalization.
They are, and I'm continuing to fight for the Restaurant Revitalization Fund. As you know, I've visited many of those restaurants. I've seen their struggles. I've heard about how they really need the Restaurant Revitalization Fund. I have fought relentlessly for it. And I'd be happy to talk to you.
Okay. Well, Senator Blumenthal, as I mentioned, I thank you so much for coming on each and every week. And I look forward to chatting about that. I guess next week we'll have to chat about it. So thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Good morning. Welcoming to the show this morning is Jan Jones, who's a professor of hospitality and tourism at the College of Business at University of New Haven. And we're going to chat a little bit about the impact on the travel and hospitality industry and what the future looks like. Good morning, Jan. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
So, you know, Jan, during the pandemic, it became the world of the, you know, great open road, the road trip. That seemed to be the popular way of traveling because people couldn't get on cruises, didn't feel comfortable getting on planes, didn't really want to get on Metro North trains, so on and so forth. So it was the car, you know, the car was the way to travel. And now we're living in a time where we are creeping closer and closer to $5 a gallon. So let's start with that. And how travel trends and even for our hospitality industries, how are they being rocked currently in the state we're living in?
Yeah, so it's actually been, we finally were getting a little consumer confidence. People are getting out again. And like you said, road trips were very, very popular last summer. But obviously with these prices going up, it is going to impact not just travel, but also our food and hotel industries as well. So you'll see prices going up and some people deciding not to take those longer trips just because the prices are just prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because COVID was a big reason. Obviously, people didn't want to go to other countries, for example. But I've noticed recently that friends of mine or people I see on social media who had trips to Europe, for example, they don't want to go. They don't want to go right now because of what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. Even if it's places like France or Italy, Spain, it's amazing. But nobody wants to really leave the United States. And I'm wondering on an international level what we're kind of dealing with right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, you just said it exactly how it is. People were finally getting excited to travel again and getting some confidence in being on airplanes and cruise lines. And global travel this summer is just going to be really impacted if something doesn't change. It's just so devastating for the people in that region, but it's also going to be a really huge impact on global travel to Europe in particular.
So what exactly do, I would say, for people who work in this industry, hospitality, I'm thinking like hotels, for example, car rentals, some of these industries, maybe not car rentals so much because they barely can keep up with demand. But especially I think of like hospitality, the hotels and restaurants, for example, you know, what can they do to essentially keep their heads afloat? If they don't have people, like Connecticut, for example, you know, our summer season is huge. Our summer season is a big deal for people to come in, to experience our restaurants, to be able to stay and experience things like the amphitheater in Bridgeport, for example. And if we're down on people wanting to even travel, what is that going to potentially mean for a lot of our local businesses in the hospitality industry?
Yeah, so actually Connecticut is, you know, uniquely located between two very large cities, Boston and New York City. So I actually think that we are going to see quite a bit of travel into and through Connecticut this summer. I do think we're going to see regional travel. I just don't think people are going to take the, I'm going to travel across, you know, the United States to go out west. So I just think what we have to do, though, is spend the money to market, to let folks know what we do have and what's available, creating packages for people. So I think, in the state tourism office is working on this. I actually think we're pretty well positioned to attract some folks from the region. I think the biggest impact, especially with the gas prices, is going to be those long road trips where people might have gone to Florida or they might have gone out west. So if Connecticut can really get that marketing campaign out and going soon, I think that we're going to see that some regions are still going to do pretty well in Connecticut. And it's just because, like, they people who may have gone farther or may have gone international are now looking for something more local. So I'm hopeful for it. I think, fortunately, though, what people might not realize is the experience may be different than what they've had in the past. So, you know, restaurants may not be open for full amounts of time because they have still some worker shortages or prices may go up. Yeah. So, unfortunately, our industry is getting hit at every single direction. It's supply chain still, it's gas prices, and then now shortages for workers. So we really have to support the industry. People are going to be looking still to do something. And if we're smart, now is the time to really get the message out that we are open for business and we're ready for you. But it is challenging.
And Jan, just so everyone knows, is a professor of hospitality and tourism at the University of New Haven, but she also is a nationally recognized commentator on travel and tourism. She has spent the last 20 years conducting research, serving on international committees, presenting in over 14 countries about the importance of being able to sustain the tourism development and industry in general. So, you know, Jan, I'm curious what your thoughts are, though, that Connecticut seems to be jumping on a lot of flight opportunities. So like you said, the classic road trip to Florida, that's pretty much out of the cards for a lot of people right now. But when you have places like Bradley now hosting Breeze Airways and Tweed hosting airlines like Avelo, and even the CAA looking to take over Sikorsky and make that commercial at some point, I would think this is a shift for Connecticut that we've really never seen. And I think the time couldn't be better for this to be introduced in Connecticut.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And one of the advantages of some of these smaller airlines is that they are doing direct flights. And so that's one of the reasons that people are so frustrated right now. Some of the larger airlines, you know, they have to move flights around. People are getting stranded. And this is just I've said this from the beginning. I was very excited to see Avelo come in. I was very excited to see some of the, you know, the progress and things happening at Bradley, because yes, the timing is perfect for stuff like that. Those short flights and also, you know, direct right to your destination is amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, as we talk about travel, I'm watching on Good Morning America this morning. They've got people up at Stowe, Vermont, or at Trapp Family Lodge, which is like my own backyard. Used to live in Vermont for 10 years. Yeah, Jan, it's just interesting. They're talking about how did you keep the hospitality industry alive during the pandemic? And it's just interesting. I think this is on a lot of people's minds. You know, I think a lot of people are wondering, what does the future sort of look like? And I know I'm not calling you a gypsy. I'm not saying that you are sitting here with a crystal ball in your hands, Jan, but in your professional opinion, you know, once we do get through, because we will, I know we'll get out the other side of this, you know, do you think there's like a time limit, if you will, for the hospitality industry to recover? And what I mean by that is, for example, during the pandemic, we had restaurants that inevitably were like, we can't survive. We have to shut down. Then you had some that thought, okay, let's get through this and we can survive. And two years later, they either were able to do it or they just couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious from your perspective, you know, how long after the pandemic, we now are in this state of inflation and shortages and gas prices and war in another, you know, time zone, essentially. What do you think is sort of the capacity the hospitality industry can manage at this point to survive? Like, what does the future sort of look like?
Yeah, I mean, I also am like you. I try to stay positive in the sense that I do feel that our industries will bounce back eventually. But sadly, a lot of the fabric of our industry in Connecticut is a lot of small businesses, and they are really struggling and they need our support from all directions. And I do think there are potentially still some businesses globally that are smaller that have been in survival mode, like you said, for 2 years, that just won't be able to take another hit. Mm. And, you know, sadly, I think even places that you go, you know, you mentioned Vermont, you may go somewhere and there might be that restaurant or that hotel that you always stayed in, and it may not be there, or maybe new ownership. Mm. And we're seeing a lot of that. I am hopeful. I really think that the state of Connecticut in general has a new vision for, you know, marketing, and we have to care about diversity and creating really a diverse opportunities for people that are traveling. And so making sure that we're reaching out to all markets that we can, and sustainability. I think this has been a huge lesson in sustainability, you know, yeah, making sure that whatever you're putting together is sustainable, and that that you can handle something like this in the future. Hopefully people have, I'm sure they have learned, you know, some hard lessons during all of this. Mm-hmm. But yes, some businesses, I'm sure you've even seen it, restaurants or even smaller hotels have new ownership, or they're just not there anymore.
Yeah.
And that's hard. But
it's devastating.
One thing I love, I don't know if you have time, but the one thing I do love is Connecticut has a lot of outdoor recreation opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the one thing to me that's consistent positive, is that people seem to want more active adventure types of opportunities. And we have that in Connecticut. And I think that is the one area that's really going to grow, people really just wanting to kind of reconnect and be active, which is great.
You know, it's funny, Jan, I was thinking about how I don't know if this was a summer or two summers or even five ago, because I'm like an old soul millennial. I'm not hip with the words or the times or the lingo or anything like that. My sisters make fun of me all the time. But there was a summer that was like, it was coined like hot girl summer or something like that. I don't remember what it was about, but I think it was like everybody just striving to look the best they could. So whenever they went out, they looked beautiful. And it was a social media thing, essentially. I'd love to do some kind of a campaign that's like staycation summer, where everybody, when they want to go away this summer, summer instead of literally leaving Connecticut, like challenging people and sharing where they go and just going to different, you know, creameries, farms, hotels, towns, whatever. I think it'd be so cool if the state of Connecticut did some kind of campaign that was like hashtag staycation summer 2022 or something like that, just to try and help our hospitality industry get through the hump. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. And I think they are. I think you're going to see some new messaging and some new opportunities that we may have not seen in ads and, you know, previous to now. We have a new director and she is just, you know, she has some really amazing experience in other locations. I think you are going to see that is going to be a focus of like, look what we have. You know, we have these opportunities. One of the things that I've always thought we needed to do more for is for the younger crowds in Connecticut. You know, we have amazing live bands. We have, you know, all kinds of opportunities at some of these different smaller towns that nobody really knows about.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think we're going to see a little bit more of that. And I'm really excited about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, staycation, I feel like people maybe are tired of the staycation term.
I totally get it. But, you know, it's amazing, though, Jan, because I have to be honest. You're right. I think people are sick of being stuck where they are. But it is amazing because Connecticut is very diverse. And unless you really give Connecticut a chance and you really do venture up a different highway into a different corner, over to a different place, you know, when we see, Hartford is 50 minutes away from Milford. It's interesting because you pass through so many different places that if you stayed there for a night or for a weekend, you think, oh, wow, I had no idea this was even here. So you're right. But I think it's that same mentality of if you're willing to get on a plane and go to Florida or you're willing to drive up and cross over into Springfield, Massachusetts, why don't you just chill for a second and just go a half hour northeast and see what you find? That's all. That's all. I just think.
Oh, no, I totally agree with you. I just feel like maybe we need like a new term for it. But
yeah,
I 100% agree.
You're right. Let's come up with something different. We'll work on it.
Yeah.
We'll work on it.
Yeah, we'll fix it. But you're exactly right. Is the different regions of Connecticut offer so many different opportunities. And I think we need to do a better job of selling all of Connecticut, you know, and here's what we have, because we really do have some pretty awesome places to go and things that people probably haven't seen yet.
So, I agree.
I love that.
Jan, we so appreciate having you on the show. Thank you so much for your perspective and for sharing your insight with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. AAA said that we reached the highest level of our gas prices, and that was at $4.43 a gallon. That was last Wednesday, which was even higher than our last state record, which was back in July of 2008 when we were $4.39 a gallon. So the gas prices are high. This is something that we've all been focusing on. Fran Mako of AAA is here this morning. Fran, first of all, how can we even save at the pump? In fact, let me back up even more than that, Fran. Why is it that some counties are higher than other counties? Like, why does Fairfield County have to have higher gas prices than New Haven County, per se?
Oh, that's the age-old question, the age-old question. And unfortunately, it's complicated. In Connecticut, we have something called zone pricing. I have a very difficult time explaining it, but basically the state is divided into different zones and different areas are allowed to charge different prices. It's whatever the market can bear. So it's perceived that down in Lower Fairfield County, people are a little bit more affluent and could pay higher prices. Now, this is a very simplistic answer. I'm sure there are more specific reasons for it, but prices down in Fairfield County are usually higher because it's perceived that people down that neck of the woods can pay
afford
those
it more.
Prices. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, it's to make it even more simplistic. This is how the capitalistic market works. You know, and depending upon your point of view, it could be capitalism at its best, where you can charge whatever you want and people could buy whatever you want, or at its worst, because you don't want to pay as high prices as maybe perhaps Hartford area or New Haven County. It's just very complicated in the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely have stricter environmental regulations than most other states. The cost of doing business is always higher in Connecticut. And the biggest response or the biggest answer is we pay higher in gas taxes. We pay the federal 18-cent gas tax like everybody does, but then we have state taxes, then we have a gross receipt taxes. So there's about 55 cents, maybe a little bit more, worth of taxes on that gallon of gas.
Yeah, it's just so affordable to live here. It's unbelievable.
On the other hand, you could be in
California. Yes.
Where you're paying over $5.25, something like that.
Yeah, so, I think I was reading something, Fran. They thought they were going to get up as high as like $7 a gallon by the time this whole thing is over, which is just, that's insane.
Part of the problem is this too. Definitely the war in Ukraine is a contributing factor.
Sure.
Because threats were made by Putin that he's withdrawing crude oil. They're a major exporter to a lot of other countries, not really us.
Not really us, though. Yeah. That's what I thought was interesting.
So because we're a global market and he's making threats, he may have already withheld the crude. Prices are going to go up. So there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of speculation, and the more crude oil goes up, the more the prices at the pump goes up. Again, we are a global economy. We are not isolated. We're in little Connecticut here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I saw on TV this morning that crude was going for $124 a barrel.
Wow.
And as you're watching the ticker, it's changing. So again, lots of speculation. We're hearing more and more about the war. We're hearing about threats. Oil is a commodity, so you have traders and investors buying and selling in a frenzy.
Right.
And until that calms down a little, and again, demand is up.
Yeah, demand is really up. And I think that's kind of the question then, Fran, is as we hear the consumers, are still driving, we're still going places, what is your recommendation? How can we save money, essentially, save our gas?
Well, short of not driving at all, which is a very impractical
go nowhere
suggestion, probably the easiest thing that people can do, because this is in your control, is simply slow down. Gas mileage is will rapidly decrease, when you are traveling less than 60 miles an hour. I mean, most of us don't go 60 miles an hour. We go a lot faster on the highway. So just simply easing off that accelerator by, 5-10 miles, you will see some results by the end of the week. But you have to be consistent on it.
Mm.
Combine your errands. I don't want to say carpooling because I think that is really impractical unless you live in a big city like Bridgeport or New Haven where you're
right, because you're still having to go to other places to go pick up those kids anyway. So I kind of agree with you. Unless you're in like a very congregate setting, if you will, it's sort of hard to do that. Yeah.
I kind of thought of this the other day when I was going past one of the schools in Milford. We pay a lot of taxes for education.
Mm.
We pay for those school buses, and there is a line of parents stretching around the block and then some delivering kids to school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have the kids take the school bus. And there's all kinds of reasons why parents do it. It's a sacrifice, but I mean, we are paying for those school buses, so you might want to have your kids take transportation that's already provided for you, so you can save some gas.
True.
Inflate your tires properly. I mean, people just do not check their tires. They're usually underinflated. Check them once a month, and you can go to a gas station, and of course in Connecticut it's free air. You don't pay for air in Connecticut. And maintain your car. I mean, these are easy things that you could do. You could change your own air filter.
Mm-hmm.
You could inflate your own tires. I don't know if I would change my own oil. One of the days when I'm laying on my back under a car, so I would go to a professional to do that.
Sure.
But all these things do add up, mm-hmm. and we just need to be consistent. Nobody wants to be consistent. I mean, after the pandemic, we were going hog wild to get out and about.
To do whatever. It's so true.
But, you know, on a positive note, what goes up eventually comes down. It eventually will. And until everything shakes out, it may be a while. But now we're at the pain point, I like to call it, when it's over $4 a gallon, people mm-hmm. start to think about what could I do to reduce my gas consumption.
Yeah, reduce it and stretch your dollar a little bit, too. Make sure that you're spending wisely. Fran Mako, do you guys have any more tips or anything like that on AAA's website? Can we get AAA's website for people to get more resources?
Sure. Go on AAA.com. There is a link, I believe, on the very top on the menu bar that says News and Safety.
Okay.
You can go there. There's also under Automotive, our car doctor. He always has tips. Or just Google it in the search bar, you know, gas saving tips, car doctor, things like that, and it will bring you to the page.
Okay. Fran Mako of AAA, we so appreciate getting your time every other week. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.